Hello and welcome to episode 10 of the No Shows Sportscast. I am Trevor Koos and we're here in No Shows Studios and I'm joined by Mark Ling. Mark, how's it going?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I'm excited about our part one topic and very excited about our part two topic when we get to my favorite topic, fantasy baseball.
That's not your favorite. So for those who didn't listen last time, this is like our eighth take opening this.
It's at least eight
because we decided last week that we were going to do this podcast drunk because it's our 10th podcast.
Because that's what people do for their 10th podcast.
It's tradition.
That's what people do that want to like go somewhere in this.
Yeah, if you want to be taken seriously, you have to do it while inebriated.
Exactly.
And we want to be taken seriously, so... This is about our eighth take because Trevor once called himself Mark. He started saying random words when he was doing the introduction. So here we are.
Yeah, it's mostly my fault that this is the eighth take.
No, but... it's because I contribute very little to this. Sitting here and talking. So yes, so here we are. We're a few drinks in, and we'll be drinking throughout the recording of the podcast. And so we'll start talking about things.
So for part one, we wanted to simplify it a little bit considering our current states. And so I decided that we were just going to talk top five list instead of our normal top three list. And the top five is going to be top five worst contracts in baseball history.
My beer is warm.
Whose fault is that?
The weather's. I don't want to take the...
So,
top five contracts
in worst contracts in baseball history. We're going to start with our top fives and then move to honorable mentions.
Okay, so instead of ending with our tops,
we're going to start, kind of like you do usually, where you have like a bunch of other guys. Like, this guy would have been good for the list too, but I'm just talking about him for no reason.
Yep, that's how I do it.
So, I'm going to start off... I have a number one, but the other four that I have are kind of in whatever order. But the number one is by far the worst, in my opinion.
Okay.
So, number four, I'm going to start off with Alfonso Soriano.
You're going to start with number four, even though we're doing a top five?
Yes. I'm going to leave that in there, too. Not even going to edit it. So, number five.
I think we just start with number four.
No, we're going to start with number five, and I'm going to go with Alfonso Soriano.
Yep.
Who signed a 5-year, $90 million contract with a full no-trade clause before the 07 season.
That was 3 years ago.
Yes. And in 09, he actually hit .241 before being shut down for the year.
That's not very good.
Yeah. And basically, his problem has been health. You know, his
terribleness.
Well, it's mostly health because he's getting older. But his legs haven't been very healthy, so he hasn't been able to steal. And that's really where Soriano's value has come from, is that he's been a decent power-speed combo, at least for fantasy baseball. He's always been an awful defensive player. The Cubs finally moved him off into left field, which I think was a good move because second base, he was just a butcher there. He was just a bad defensive player.
Can you name the four teams Alfonso Soriano has played in his career?
Played for the Yankees, Nationals, Rangers, and Cubs.
I've completely forgot about the Nationals.
It was the 1 year.
I'm looking at it right now. 2006, yeah. And he had a pretty.
He had a very good year, and that's why the Cubs
home runs, 41 stolen. That was his best year.
Yeah, that's why the Cubs signed him, is because he had a career year, and the Cubs were like, "Well, he's obviously going to keep doing that."
40-40. He went 30-30 the year before in Texas, and then he bumped it up to 40-40 in Washington, and it's basically been downhill since then.
Yeah, and really, like I was saying, the problem has been health for him. He just hasn't been able to be on the field that often. And he got shut down at a certain point last year. And
can you pronounce the city that he's from the Dominican Republic?
I don't even know what city he's from.
San Pedro de Macorís.
There you go. That's out to listeners from there.
The San Pedro de Macorís.
Yeah. So that's my number five, at least. I mean, he did start out well. He had a OPS of .897 in 07.
Interesting.
A decent average, but really a nice power speed year from him. And, I mean, he was playing left field, so it wasn't really... His defense wasn't going to be a factor at that point. He's still pretty bad out there, but he's not like Adam Dunn out in left field or anything like that.
Yeah, he could bounce back. He's kind of old, and he was injured.
He could definitely bounce back. If he stays healthy... Yeah. and he plays more learns than to take a pitch every once in a while.
If he plays like 140 games or up, he'll be good.
Yeah, I mean, health is pretty much his issue. Right. Do you want to go with a number five?
No, I want to just go. I'm not going to rank him because that takes effort, and that's not something I'm willing to give right now.
That's
so
fair.
I'm just going to go with one of the worst contracts I've heard of. Kevin Brown.
That was a pretty bad
one. Of the Dodgers, $105 million, 7 years.
I believe it was the first contract ever to break $100 million.
Even worse.
Yeah. So
Kevin Brown,
he had a couple good years. He had a few good years for the Dodgers.
He has to have had a couple of good years, or else they wouldn't have given $100 million.
No, he had a couple good years after the contract.
You like that analysis?
Yeah, that was a great analysis.
So his only year on the Padres,
right.
Which is, everyone does good on the Padres. He had 257 innings pitched exactly, 257 strikeouts exactly, which is a ton of strikeouts.
Yeah.
He had 3 years in a 4 years in a row where he had over 200 strikeouts. 97 to 2000. And he was good for the first, looks like, 2 years of his contract with the Dodgers. In 2000, his second year, he had 216 Ks, a 2.58 whip, 2.58 ERA, and only 13 wins. So
yeah.
He was good at the beginning of the contract, but it basically, after 2000...
I think with him also, it was health.
It was health, yeah. The wheels definitely... He pitched 19 games in 2001... He started 19 games, and he started 10 games in 2002, and yeah, so basically he got hurt, and he was old, and they gave him a bad contract, so it wasn't an ideal situation.
And he had that weird wind-up where he turned his back completely to the batter's box.
Right.
Which, when I think he had back issues was his problem, so that's why, you know, given his windup, his interesting windup, he wasn't able to, you know, follow through.
And then the brilliant Yankees signed him in 2004.
Yeah. I don't rated for him on that same contract.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, yes. So he had finished 5 seasons with the Dodgers, and I think I said, it was a 7-year deal. So yeah, they had him for the last 2 years of, like, his $20 million deal or whatever it was.
Right. So... my next one, not in any particular order, like I said before, Carl Pavano.
Yeah, he's bad.
He's awful. He signed a 4-year.
He's not bad now. He was super bad during the contract.
He's a respectable 3, 4, 5 starter now.
Five. The Indians, who are terrible.
Yeah. The Twins.
Even better.
He signed a 4-year, basically $40 million contract with the Yankees. He only pitched 3 of those years at all. He spent an entire year on the disabled list. The years he did pitch, he worked an even 5 ERA. His record was 9-8 while with the Yankees.
Sounds bad.
And he only pitched a total of 145 innings in those 3 years.
Yeah, he was super bad when he was on the Yankees.
It was just...
not the good kind of super
bad. And it was crazy. It was like he had done very well with the Marlins. Although everyone seemed to think that it was not going to continue with the Yankees. It was one of those contracts where as soon as they signed him, everyone was like, really? Really? Yankees?
Do you know the most people he's ever struck out in a year?
In a year?
In a single season, do you know the maximum amount of strikeouts Carl Pavano was?
Maybe like 150?
147. And
yeah.
That was last year.
Last year?
It was last season.
Wow.
It was his career high. In 2004, the year before the Yankees signed him, he struck out 139 people in 222 innings.
Yeah,
he's never been an overpowering pitcher. It was a bad idea by the Yankees.
He had a decent ERA with the Marlins, and it was one of those things that the Yankees, everyone questioned it as soon as the Yankees signed him.
Well, it's because the Yankees are terrible.
Yeah, but and the thing is, they signed $40 million away, and it doesn't faze them at all because they can go out and sign anyone else they need.
Yankees, what are you going to do?
Yeah. Your next worst contract?
Okay, I'm prepared for this. I'm going to say Chan Ho Park by the Texas Rangers.
That's a very bad contract.
$65 million for 5 years.
And I don't have the stats in front of me, but he was not a good starter for the Rangers. He made his way to the Padres after a while, I think.
Yes.
He recently played with the Phillies last year.
Now he's on the Yankees, I feel like. Yes, okay, so here we're good to go. He was on the Dodgers from 94 to 2001, and he had one good year. In the year 2000, He pitched 226 innings, struck out 217, had a 3.27 whip.
Yeah.
ERA.
Yeah.
That was pretty good. I didn't know he was that good.
Yeah. The offseason of 01 was kind of the season where that was where Manny got his really big contract. That was where Helton got his really big contract.
Right.
Like, teams kind of – I think Hampton signed that year. Like, there were – teams were throwing around money that year, and the Rangers were one of those teams.
And I take it back. He actually had two consecutive good years in 2000 and 2001 with the Dodgers. He had over 200 strikeouts, an ERA of 3.5 or under. He was good for a couple years, but still – at the beginning of the contract, he was pretty bad, and now he's pretty bad.
He's basically a middle reliever at this point. He's not
exactly
a starter anymore.
Yeah.
And the amount of money that he was paid at that point does not equal what he is now.
Certainly not.
Okay, so my next worst contract is going to be a little bit old school. Not horribly, but kind of the beginning of the new era of contracts. And Albel signed with the Orioles in 99... for 5 years, $65 million contract.
Yes.
And now he was really, really good with the Indians and the White Sox before that. Basically the whole decade of the 90s. He was an amazing hitter. You know, he was finishing in the top five for MVP votings. You know, he was an all-star most years. You know, he was a very, very, very good hitter. And he signed this 5-year, $65 million contract with the Orioles. And after 2 years, he retired.
Yeah.
And it was basically his problem was he had a hip issue. And now, you know, he did produce decently for the Orioles, but he was one of those Milton Bradley types where it was a huge headache the whole time.
Right.
And then eventually got hurt. And now, you know, nowadays a 5-year, $65 million contract, if someone were to sign, you know, that's what less than what Jason Bay signed for, I think.
Yeah, less than what J.D. Drew signed for.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily as big of a deal now, but back then, this was a huge contract the Orioles were signing him to.
Yeah, it was 11 years ago.
Yeah, and you know, it was mostly health-related, kind of like most of the guys on my lists.
Right.
But he...
the year before they signed him, he was on the White Sox. He hit 49 home runs, had 152 RBI. He hit 328 with a 1.054 OPS. He had a tremendous season.
He was really good in the 90s, and he just fell off, like off a cliff. There was
no decline. The next year, he had 37 home runs, and at 297, had a 941 OPS. He was still pretty good, but he was not like MVP caliber. Like
right. It was the 2 years he spent with the Orioles, it was decent.
Maybe he should have brought the steroids with him from Chicago to Baltimore.
Exactly. He didn't ship those.
Use DHL instead of FedEx.
Are
we allowed to talk about commercial things on the podcast?
I have no idea what the rules
are.
Well,
you can sue Trevor. Not allowed to.
Oh, thanks.
No problem.
So, your third contract?
Third. I'm gonna say Jason. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Jason. Kendall? Bay.
Yankees.
Giambi.
Jason Giambi.
Yeah.
I have heard inside reports from insiders that Jason Giambi is a really good guy. He's a good leader. He, aside from taking the whole steroids thing that we like to talk about, he's a good guy and he's a good hitter, obviously, because the first year he was the MVP of the American League the year before the Yankees signed him.
Right.
He had 38 home runs, 47 doubles is what I was looking at. He had 342 with a 1.137 OPS.
Yeah, so
really good.
Amazing year.
Right. And then the next 2 years, he had 41 home runs each. And then after that, 12 home runs.
Yeah.
32 home runs.
He just fell off. Yeah.
So the first 2 years of the contract with the Yankees were pretty good. Actually, the first year, he had 41 home runs and hit 314 batting average. The next year, 41 home runs, 250 batting average. So he did really good the first year, maybe his career year, and then after that he basically fell off a cliff.
Yeah, and that could be steroids easily. I mean, we'll never know for sure.
Right.
But it was right around that time, and it definitely worked out pretty poorly for Giambi in the end. I mean, he got paid big time, so who really cares? And he's still in the majors with the Rockies. But, yeah, he is no longer – I think he's a backup for the Rockies at this point, behind Helton.
Right, definitely, and especially because they don't have the DH, obviously.
Right. All right. A segue to my next bad contract was a Rocky.
Interesting.
Back in 01, I touched on this a few minutes ago. Mike Hampton signed a 8-year, $121 million contract. And here are a couple stats for his time with the Rockies. He only accrued 62 starts.
Good word.
The whole time. Thank you. His ERA was almost 6. It was 5.75.
ERA is like golf, people. Lower is better.
Yes, for those that don't know. 5 is bad. And his record was only 21-28 overall.
That's less than good.
So, in the year 2008, before he ended up pitching for the Braves that year, he was still getting paid, having not pitched since 2005.
Right.
Now his problem, a recurring theme for most of the guys on my worst contracts, was he just had horrible shoulder issues. His arm basically fell off. And, you know, he tried to recover from that. He was always a good hitter for a pitcher. But he just, you know, the Rockies overpaid for him because no one wanted to pitch in Colorado at that time. And, you know, it showed. It definitely showed. Obviously, it was a horrible contract. He only ended up, you know, throwing a couple years in Colorado before being traded. And, you know, the Rockies, I mean, he's obviously now off their books, but he was on their books for a really long time.
Yeah, he had two good years, 99 to 2000. He had back-to-back two, like, solid years, not tremendous. ERA around 3.00, and he had around 160-ish Ks. Strikeouts, he had 177 to 151. That's not a superstar season. That's okay. That's pretty good. That's above average. That's not worthy of being the top-paid pitcher in baseball.
Right. And like I was saying before, 01 was that year where just contracts were thrown around like they were nothing.
Right.
And Hampton definitely cashed in at that point.
Yeah, no, congrats to him and his agent for getting him that much money, but it was a bad deal by the team.
Oh, definitely. Your fourth worst? Or your
fourth
worst? Yeah, not necessarily.
I don't know. I'm just going to go with one of the worst ones I'm looking at. I feel like I'm going to take your worst one. Parazito?
Yeah. Easily the worst contract. I'm obviously biased being a Giants fan.
Right.
But let me run down the numbers for Zito with his time for the Giants. He signed a 7-year, $126 million contract.
A lot of money.
In 07. So, this is,
couple years ago. Unlike
a couple of the other contracts, you know, this is still active.
Right.
And it's going to be active for a couple more years. Luckily for the Giants, it will be coming off the books the same year that Tim Lincecum will venture into free agency for the first time. And I covered this actually on the blog a few weeks ago. And, you know, that's going to be a bonus, at least at that point. But the amount of money that they're spending on Zito at this point is ridiculous. He, so far, with his time with the Giants, he has a 31-43 record. He is 12 games under 500
right.
as a Giant.
Right.
He has a 4.56 ERA.
That's bad.
And a 1.43 WHIP.
Even worse.
Yeah. And now to kind of mirror that with his A's numbers, he had a 3.55 ERA with his time with A's.
Pretty solid.
And a 1.25 WHIP.
Again, solid.
And that includes a Cy Young year.
Very good.
So, I mean, it's interesting because he had very, very good numbers for the A's. But signed him, they were pretty much bidding against themselves.
Let me drop some knowledge.
Let's drop it. Yeah.
Ready?
What else are we doing here?
So it seems like the very first year where he pitched a full season, he pitched 14 games his rookie year, started 14 games. The next year for Oakland, he started 35, a full season. In that season, in 2001, he pitched 214 innings, had 205 strikeouts, had a 3.49 ERA. One of his best seasons. The next year, I think, was his Cy Young, 2002. 2.75 ERA, 182 strikeouts. I feel like that was his best season.
That sounds about right.
So he did pretty good then. And then his last year with Oakland, 2006, the year before the Giants signed him, was almost a little bit worse than than 2009, the season he just had with the Giants. So he actually terrible in 06 years with the Giants, but he was actually kind of better than his last year with the A's.
He's bounced back a little.
He kind of improved a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
His ERA was worse, which is kind of a superficial statistic. He walked less guys, and he struck out more
Right.
in less innings. So his approach didn't work his first year in San Francisco, and he's kind of changing that now, and it's kind of working.
And he's a decent 4 or 5 starter at this point, but the A Giants thought they were signing.
No, certainly not. It's a terrible contract. That's why I brought it up.
Yeah.
They paid him way too much money, especially considering the first 2 years they gave him, he gave them. But with that said, he's not terrible now.
I mean, he's a usable starter at this
Yeah.
point.
Well, to be fair, he's not. He wasn't terrible last year. No
Right.
one. He could be terrible again this year.
He could.
He could be super terrible.
Easily.
But he could also be not terrible.
Right. So now,
Expert analysis.
yeah. now that since that's, we kind of gave that away, that's my number one worst contract. Did you have a fifth contract you wanted to bring up?
No, but I can do what I always do and name like a few guys that
We
aren't.
definitely have a few honorable
All right, so
mentions.
there's Mo Vaughn,
That was an awful contract for the
88
Angels.
million 6 years with the Angels.
Right.
There's a couple others. Danny Nagel,
With the Rockies also.
55 million for 5 years.
Right.
Darren Dreifert.
That's the one that I kind of left off because all the lists I saw, that's on almost every list. It just seems kind of like cliche at this point, but he was,
Right.
I mean, it's one of those contracts where it doesn't even make sense beforehand. Like his numbers were not that good before contract.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden the Dodgers sign that contract, and throw away all that money and he just doesn't give them anything basically.
Right.
Yeah, Darren Dreifert was an awful, awful contract.
Some guy that's on the list that I'm looking at now is Julio Lugo.
With the Red Sox?
Red Sox, 36 million 4 years.
Yeah, I mean he obviously wasn't what they thought they were signing.
Oh, for sure. He was pretty bad, but I feel like 36 million for 4 years is a pretty low risk, at least in comparison to like Brazito.
Well, yeah, I mean, nowadays throwing 40 million at a subpar player, especially for a big club like the Red Sox,
Yeah,
it's
and at
not
a
really going to
premium
hurt him that
position.
much.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely in a vacuum, that's a terrible deal, but I
Yeah.
think the Red Sox could weather that
Well,
storm
and
better
the
than
Red
anyone
Sox and the
else.
Yankees in general, like they signed Carl Pavano, they bounced back, they won the World Series last year. Those kind of contracts don't hurt those teams as much as, say, the whole reason we kind of started on this topic was, in my opinion, like why I thought of this. Well, technically, I was given the idea by a friend of ours, who is probably listening at this point.
What's up, buddy?
But the whole reason it was brought up was that huge contract with the Twins.
Who brought it up?
Shane.
Shane.
Yeah.
Shane Miller.
Shane Miller.
Shout out to Shane
Yeah.
Miller. Oh, wait. I need to say something. I need to say hello to my mother. Hi, Mom. And I need to say hi to Jennifer, my fiance. Hi, Jennifer. I was talking to them about doing this drunk cast today, and she said I better say hi. So, and Spencer. Spencer listens, my brother. He listens every week. So, Shane, Mom, Jennifer, Spencer, you guys listen every week. Thank you very much.
Can we continue?
I think we're done with this section.
No, we have a few more honorable mentions.
Okay, go ahead.
But anyway, I mean,
That was
obviously.
rude of you just to sh That was my whole family, basically.
The whole point was that Joe Mauer signed that huge contract, and it could definitely, I mean, the length and the size of the contract,
That's what she said.
if he gets hurt, could really hurt the Twins. I mean, that's a huge
Mauer?
risk.
Oh,
Yeah.
for sure.
That's a huge risk they're taking. It's not like the Yankees where they sign a big deal and then they can just bounce off and sign AJ Burnett and CC Sabathia.
The hard situation that the Twins were in, though, is that they basically had no choice.
They
It would
had
have
to
been
sign him.
a PR disaster if they let him go
Exactly.
to the
I mean,
Yankees.
he's a local boy.
Exactly.
I mean, he's from Minnesota.
The best player to ever play for the franchise, basically.
Yeah.
It
Exactly.
was a risk they could not afford to not take.
Now, real quick before we close up. For part one, I have a few honorable mentions. I wanted to bring up
Honorable mention away.
Carlos Silva signed with the Mariners in 07, a 4-year, $48 million contract.
All right.
Basically has done nothing with the Mariners, and the only reason they were able to trade him is because the Cubs really wanted to get rid of Milton Bradley.
Yep, because he's a crazy person.
He's a crazy person. But, I mean, he had a few good years in Minnesota, Carlos Silva did. But he did nothing for the Mariners basically, and they're still paying him some money.
Right.
Another horrible contract was Andrew Jones to the Dodgers for 2 years.
Yeah.
$36.2 million for the 2 years.
Right.
After a year, they paid him to go away.
I would like to get paid to go.
I was actually talking, shout out to Shane Miller again.
What's up, buddy?
He was saying, do you think the Giants, in hindsight, would pay Zito $50 million to not pitch? I mean, the Yankees paid Carl Pavano basically $40 million to not pitch.
That's a good question.
Would the Giants have paid Zito $50 million to not pitch? I say yes.
I say no.
Well, now, and he's a decent pitcher, but I think that they could find a replacement level pitcher for Zito for not nearly as much.
Todd Wellemeyer,
Yes.
perchance.
Awesome. He's going to be awesome this year.
I would definitely take him over Madison Bumgarner, my top prospect.
Burn. So anyway, Carlos Silva awful, Andrew Jones awful. One that is near and dear to our hearts, Eric Chavez of the A's.
Yeah,
He signed a 6 year, $66 million contract back in 04. So since we've been out of high school, Eric Chavez has been paid that much money and played hardly any baseball.
That reference only matters to us.
Basically.
So I've actually heard that he's looking good this season, Eric Chavez.
Well, because he's not playing third base anymore.
He's not playing third base. He's gonna play some third base. He's not gonna be a full-time player. He might get around 400 at bats. That'd be like his max.
Probably.
He'll sort of split time at first and third in DH, but
Yeah.
he's not looking bad this year.
You know, if they can throw him in DH most of the time,
Right.
at first base some, you know, just to like bring down the tension, the defensive requirements of him.
Right, which kind of is unfortunate because that was one of his strong
That was
points.
easily his strongest point, was using the baseman. But yeah, he's been paid 60. He has a 6 year, $66 million contract.
That's
That
a lot of
is,
sixes.
yeah, because he's the devil. And
Interesting.
now to finish out our honorable mentions, someone who has something in common with Andrew Jones because
He's
his team
fat.
paid him to go away.
Not me.
Not you. Jerry Mathews Jr.
Yep.
Now with the Mets, he signed a 5 year, $50 million contract with the Angels in
That's ten
06.
million dollars a year.
And the Angels got nothing in return to get him away. Basically, they got like a low-level prospect,
Right.
and they paid all but $1 million of his remaining contract.
You hate when it comes down to that.
It at that point, you're just like, it's just like literally paying him to go away, so you're gonna have to eat that bullet, you know, financially, and you're just trying to get him out of the clubhouse so you can move on, not
Just so you
have
can
that
have someone,
reminder every day.
yeah, just so you can have someone who's worth something on your roster.
Exactly. And Gary Matthews Jr. is not someone that's worth something.
Not at $10 million a year,
Yeah.
certainly not.
So that'll do it for us here in part one. We will be back in a minute in part two, fantasy section, where Mark and I will dissect a draft that we just in we were part of today, earlier today. And so yeah, as always, our music is brought to us by Music Alley from Mevio. And we have not picked it out yet again, but it's
I'm
gonna be
sure it'll
awesome.
be
It's
fantastic.
always fantastic. They good people over there at Music
Oh
Alley.
yes, we're like buddies over there.
All right, we will be back with part two in a minute. Hello and back to part two of episode 10 of the No Show Sportscast.
Drunk cast.
Drunk cast, as we're calling it affectionately this week.
Only ever affectionately.
Yeah, never not affectionately. But so part two, fantasy section. And as I teased in part one, Mark and I,
You're such a
we
tease.
are a bit of a tease here at No Show Sports.
You are a tease. Don't call me a tease.
Mark and I took place. We were part of a 9-team mixed league draft, so almost a standard for the mothership.
Super shallow
It's
league.
shallow, but a standard league at ESPN is 10, and we had completely standard settings with roster and everything. And this just happened. We started with the draft 4 hours ago. So we finished the draft, recording here now, and we're basically going to break down the draft a little bit and our feelings with our teams and who we think might have a really good shot at this. We're hoping that maybe a couple of the guys, these are a few of our friends back from high school and some people that I know from a few years ago. Hopefully they stop by and say, hey, if you guys are listening, what's up? Otherwise, we're just going to break it down. And so it was nine teams. You had pick eight. I had pick nine.
Yep.
So you basically decided to steal all my players.
No, I just decided to take good players, and then after that, you're like, hey, I like him because Mark's awesome and he always takes good players, so I'm just gonna say that I like his players.
Was exactly what my plan was.
I know you.
So it was a snake style draft. Next week, actually, we should probably talk about the next auction on
But
the
I'm not
podcast as
gonna
well.
be there.
We'll talk about it a little bit at least. We're taking place with mostly the same crew. It's going to be AL only auction league, and it's something that neither of us really have much experience with, but we're trying to like get out there, try other things. We've played in plenty of AL only leagues, but not AL only and auction at the same time. But so pick eight. We're gonna start out in the first round.
That was me.
Pick eight, Miguel Cabrera.
Miguel Cabrera.
May I just say, how did Miguel Cabrera get picked after Prince Fielder?
This is what I'm saying. He's ranked by ESPN. Miguel Cabrera is below Prince Fielder.
That's crazy.
See what I'm saying?
That's crazy. I mean, Prince Fielder might have higher home run upside.
He
Miguel
certainly
Cabrera is
does.
way more consistent with the average.
I agree.
And I would still say that overall, the Tigers lineup is just as good as the Brewers lineup.
Yes.
While the Brewers have
And
Braun
Braun and
and
Fielder.
Fielder, those are the two
There's more
best.
depth to the Tigers
There's
lineup.
way more depth. Austin Jackson, neither of us like, but he could be good.
Magleyor Núñez is old but
Johnny
not
Damon.
terrible. Johnny Damon is a
Scott
good addition.
Sizemore, who will
Scott
be
Dan.
coming up later
We
in
can
this
keep naming
talk.
people.
Huh?
If you want to keep naming people. Brandon Inge. I win. All right, let's move
Carlos Guillen. Yeah.
Okay.
So, number eight, you started off with Miguel
Yeah,
Cabrera,
so
and
we'll
I.
talk about real quick. Pujols went first, obviously.
Obviously.
Number two, Hanley Ramirez. Number three, A-Rod. Four, Brian Braun. Six,
Which I was surprised at. I'm surprised that there's.
surprised Braun went fourth.
That Braun is considered. I would take Utley over Braun.
Just for position scarcity, Brian Braun's gonna get better numbers.
And you keep calling him Brian Braun. His
Yeah,
name's Ryan Braun.
his friends call him Brian.
It's his nickname.
His
We
name
didn't
is.
want to. We weren't supposed. He told us not to tell
His
people.
nickname's Brian. He's one of the
We're
few
good
people.
friends with Ryan
He's one of
Braun.
the few people who has a nickname that's actually longer than his real
Yeah.
name.
It was Ryan's such a short name already. He
Like
decided.
Trevor's nickname is Baba Ganoush. It's much longer than his actual
People
name.
didn't need to know that.
Yes, they did.
I would also probably take Matt Kemp over Ryan Braun,
Yes, yeah.
given
I
the steal
wouldn't.
potential.
I would take Ryan. Ryan Braun
There, Matt
had,
Kemp
what,
and
20
Ryan
steals last
Braun.
year?
What?
Ryan Braun has 50 home run potential.
I don't see that. I think
Potential.
potential, maybe. So I
I
was
would
just a.
take Braun over Kemp.
I was
That's
surprised
pretty
Braun was
evident.
taken fourth, and he was taken quickly. Like, the guy wasn't thinking about
Yep.
it.
Yep. I don't
And
have a problem with it. I mean, it's really in the eye of the beholder at this point.
exactly.
I would probably prefer Ellie just because of position scarcity.
Yeah. Similar numbers, but at second base.
Yeah. A little worse numbers, but it's at a much worse position.
Right. Now, getting to my picks, the awesome picks.
Oh no. You're gonna get ridiculed by
I
to
am.
no
I
end
am.
by
I
these
am.
picks
I
and
went a little unorthodox, I think is the nicest way to put it.
a lot
A
unorthodox.
lot. So, number
This is a
nine.
nine team mixed league.
Yes.
It's super, super deep, and one of the deepest positions is what?
Pitching.
Starting pitching.
So, number 9 and 10, since we were having a snake draft, I took Tim Lincecum and Roy Halladay,
Yes.
easily the two best starting pitchers in the league.
Unquestionable.
Like, they're going to have the best numbers. Tim Lincecum's spring training stats, for those that are interested, I'm not worried at all.
Now, who
He had
cares?
similar spring training stats last year.
I could care less.
Exactly. So, I'm not sure this is going to pay off for me.
The only problem Actually, there's a couple problems I had with this. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the one problem I had is that you took Tim Lincecum before Roy Halladay.
I did that specifically.
Roy Halladay should have been taken before Tim Lincecum.
At some point, there will be a Tim Lincecum and Roy Halladay bet on our personal wager board.
We should do this right now. Why wait?
Well, I proposed PlayerRater to you, and you said you wanted to look at PlayerRater and see what it, you know,
okay,
calculates to.
So let's do five categories. Replace saves with innings pitched.
Yeah, I'll take that.
All right.
I'll put it on the board.
Do it.
We don't act. We're
we
not high
one.
Production here.
We're not copying anybody by doing
no, this
that.
Is our original thing. Does someone else do a bet board?
I don't think so. I think we're the only ones.
Me too. Original. Mark it down. Patent pending. So, Tim Lincecum, Roy Halladay, two best starters. And then on the second round, right after my pick, you went with Ryan Howard.
Right. Miguel Cabrera, Ryan Howard, both
first
baseman.
So you went, you kind of filled up. This is an ESPN standard league. So
yes.
We have first base, but then also corner infield as well as a middle infield and
right.
a utility.
Right. And five outfielders.
So it was a lot of hitters.
Yes.
And you went power early.
I went power early because I'm just going to give them a shout out. I don't know if, again, this is against the law, but Trevor and I regularly listen to a podcast called Fantasy Focus, made by ESPN.
06010?
Yeah, exactly. So we listen to that all the time. We're kind of regular listeners. We're big, super big dorks because we listen to it. We admit that. We record a fantasy baseball, basically, podcast, so we admit to being dorks. We're not ashamed. We're kind of ashamed.
A little bit. That's why we drink.
But that's exactly. That's why we need to drink our sorrows away. But here we are. They have been preaching that you can't help but get speed. Oh my!
Outfield specifically.
Yeah, but overall, basically, you're gonna get guys who are gonna steal bases. So I went with guys who don't necessarily steal a lot of bases and just jack home runs all the time.
Exactly. Which I like that idea.
Right.
I definitely like that idea. Now, one thing that I thought was interesting was Zach Greinke was the third starter off the board.
Yes.
Now,
I'm okay with it.
This was the team that had the first pick, so he had to wait, a whole, basically two rounds.
He got Albert Pujols, and then he took Zach Greinke. And to be fair, the very next pick was Felix Hernandez. The same team took Greinke and Hernandez.
Yeah.
So basically, it's the same situation as you taking Lincecum and Halladay.
Right.
They're basically 9 and 9A.
Yeah.
Basically, it's not like...
That's true.
It wasn't like Greinke was taken 18th. And then Felix was taking 28th. They were right next to each other by the same team. So they're basically equal.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a good point. I don't see Greinke as on the same... I mean, maybe the same level, but I would easily take Felix Hernandez over Greinke.
I'm not sure it's that close because Greinke won the Cy Young last year. Greinke was much better last year.
But he came out of nowhere.
Yeah. We're not playing with last year's stats, and Felix Hernandez has had like the perfect career trajectory. He's improved little by little each season, and he's only 23. So Felix Hernandez is one of the best young pitchers in the game. I fully believe that.
Yeah.
But I also believe Greinke is, and they're basically pretty even.
Yeah, definitely. And now the pick that you actually mentioned yourself, someone who ended up with Hanley Ramirez.
Yeah.
As well as David Wright.
Yeah.
Got Justin Upton.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was unhappy with that. I was thinking about taking Justin Upton instead of Ryan Howard.
Yeah. And then he fell all the way to 20 overall.
To the guy who took Hanley Ramirez and David Wright. Dude's got a good offense.
Oh, yeah. Really good offense.
So I was expecting the guy who took Albert Pujols to take Justin Upton. I saw him take Greinke. I'm like, all right, he's going to take a pitcher and he's going to take Justin Upton. No, he took Felix Hernandez and Zach Greinke. So I think number two, team whatever, I don't know the guy's name, but he has...
Team W.
Yeah, Hanley Ramirez, David Wright, and Justin Upton. I would have taken Justin Upton over David Wright, but either way,
I would probably take Justin Upton over Ian Kinsler.
Mark Teixeira.
Probably Mark Teixeira.
Yeah.
I would definitely take Justin Upton over Carl Crawford.
Yeah, just for the speed thing that we discussed earlier.
The speed and power, yeah.
Maurer was the guy who was taken right after me. So that's debatable. But, yeah, anyways, Justin Upton.
So he fell. He definitely fell. That was great value in the third round.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a nine. It would have been the end of the second round in a standard league.
Right.
But still really, really good value.
Definitely.
And then your two picks.
Right.
With the third and fourth round.
Yep.
You went hitters again.
Yep.
And you went one really, really nice power speed combo, and another guy that you obviously, I think you may have reached a little bit, at least in your opinion.
I did reach.
But
he offered what I wanted.
He offered exactly what you needed to counteract. And I mean, we're playing Rotisserie. I don't think we mentioned this yet.
No, we have not.
This is a Roto League. So
it's not head-to-head.
It's not head-to-head. The overall stats kind of matter a little more than in head-to-head.
Right. So stop being cryptic about this. I took, in the first two rounds, I took Miguel Cabrera and Ryan Howard.
Right.
In the third round, I took Grady Sizemore.
Right.
Who I like a lot this year.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely has his value down a lot from his injury.
Yeah.
If he's completely healthy in the third round, that's a great value.
Yeah, he has potential to go 30-30, 30 home runs, 30 stolen bases, which is rare. The problem with him is his batting average, and the problem with Ryan Howard was his batting average.
Yes.
That was my concern. I had Miguel Cabrera, who's going to hit 320-ish.
Yeah, 320, 330.
And Ryan Howard is going to hit 250, 260-ish. And same with Grady Sizemore. So I wanted a high average guy, and I wanted a third baseman. Because third base is shallow this year. Ichiro was on the board. I could have taken him, and he could hit 350. But he could also hit 301. Ichiro's kind of all over the board with his average. He's going to hit over 300, but it's kind of all over the
place. You don't know exactly how much.
So I took Pablo Sandoval, who's eligible at first and third. I took him 29th overall, which was a reach. I know it was a reach.
A little bit. He could definitely prove to be a decent value at that point.
So this is what I didn't admit during the draft, because I don't like to admit these kinds of things. But I took Pablo Sandoval because I was planning on taking Ryan Zimmerman.
I'm sure you were.
Who was taken by you right before me.
Yes. In rounds 3 and 4, I took Jimmy Rollins and Ryan Zimmerman.
Yes, you had to go hitter, basically.
I did. After going starter, I went best available hitters, in my opinion.
Right.
And Jimmy Rollins gives me a decent power output, potentially.
Right.
As well as a very good speed output, easily.
Right.
And Ryan Zimmerman is the start of my hitter selections that purely helps me with power.
Yeah, and he'll give you good runs and RBIs, but I was targeting Ryan Zimmerman with my pick, and he was gone. So I took the next best third baseman who could give me average, and that was Pablo Sandoval. So that's where we are there.
And now, in a couple other picks in the third and fourth round, I don't like CeCe Sabathia going so soon in the third round.
I don't mind him. Some people are taking him ahead of Felix Hernandez this year.
See, I think that's crazy.
It's a little crazy, but I think Felix is probably the better pitcher, and he's probably the better upside because he's younger. But CeCe's on the Yankees.
Right. So he's going to get easy wins.
He's going to get a lot of wins, and I think the Mariners are going to do good this year, so Felix will get wins too. But CeCe has proven to be a much more durable guy. He's proven to be high. He's much more proven, basically, and he's on a better team.
Right.
I would take Felix over CeCe, but other people don't agree with that.
Yeah, and so a few other picks in the third round. Troy Tulowitzki was someone who, had he been there for the 27th pick for me instead of Jimmy Rollins, I would easily take him over Jimmy
Rollins. He's definitely the second best shortstop behind him.
Absolutely. And Adrian Gonzalez, I felt, was a little bit of a reach.
Yeah, he was taken
23rd overall.
Yeah.
I probably would have waited about 10 picks for Adrian Gonzalez.
Right. He was
There's decent depth at first base.
There's tremendous depth at first base.
Yeah.
First base is the deepest position this year. So there was Adrian Gonzalez taken at 23. Joey Votto, who we've talked about before, was taken almost 20 picks later at 42.
I would argue that there's a very good chance that Joey Votto ends the season with a better player rater and a better 5-stat lead.
I like Adrian Gonzalez a lot.
He's very good.
He's going to be a great player.
The problem is
it's value.
It's value, yes.
I would much rather have Joey Votto two rounds later than Adrian Gonzalez.
Exactly.
Adrian Gonzalez is probably going to be a little bit better. Even considering the fact that he's probably going to get traded at some point this year and play in a better ballpark than Petco.
Right.
He's probably going to have a little bit of better numbers, but two rounds later, it's not two rounds better.
Exactly.
I would have rather taken a guy like Jacoby Ellsbury instead of Adrian Gonzalez.
Or Matt Holliday,
or Grady Sizemore, or Jimmy Rollins, and I would have had probably any of those guys over Adrian Gonzalez if I knew I could have had Votto in two rounds.
Right. Now,
Also, in between there, Kevin Youkilis went, who plays first. Pablo Sandoval plays first. Other first baseman available,
right,
too. So, go ahead.
a pick I like personally in the fourth round. It might have been a little early for him, but Aaron Hill.
Yeah.
Aaron Hill and Ben Zobrist are both kind of in the same boat. You got Ben Zobrist a couple rounds later.
A guy who I've notoriously been down on.
You hate him, personally. He did something to your family.
You say that a lot, the family thing. No, he did nothing to my family. His value...
Your family that listens.
Yes, my listening family. My mother, brother, fiancé, and our friend.
Right.
Shane.
So, who's... Yeah, exactly.
That was who... So, anyone else you want to shout out to anybody, by the way, now that we're on the topic? Your mother, does she listen?
She listens.
Hi, Mom. Hi, Leslie.
Yeah, Leslie.
What about your father?
Maybe. He listens more to my radio stuff.
Radio stuff?
Yeah.
He calls in.
He does call in. He makes fun of me for not knowing what a Utah
so
Ute is.
Hello to anyone who knows us personally and is listening.
Most of our listeners, I would imagine.
I would say probably 100% of our listeners.
I would say there's maybe one. For that one person who doesn't know us personally.
Thank you.
Thank you. Email in.
Please
we
do.
We would love to hear from you.
Absolutely. Even if you don't know us, create a fake email address and email us in just to make us feel better.
It would be awesome.
Yeah.
Getting to the draft, though.
Back to the action.
Aaron Hill in the fourth round. Ben Zobrist in the seventh round. I don't see a huge difference between the two, so maybe I don't like the Aaron Hill pick as much. I definitely love it, and let's, you know, reveal you took Ben Zobrist in the seventh round.
I did take Ben Zobrist, even though I don't like him.
Even though you don't like him.
So here,
I still like Aaron Hill in the fourth.
Here's my thought on the Aaron Hill pick. In the fourth round, Robinson Cano was taken 33rd overall. Dustin Pedroia was taken 35th overall.
Right.
Aaron Hill was taken 36th overall.
Right.
I don't know this is for a fact, but I have a feeling that the guy who took Aaron Hill was planning on taking Cano or Pedroia.
Right.
And didn't get one of those second
and
basemen.
Took the next second
and
baseman.
Took Aaron Hill. Guys like Brian Roberts and Brandon Phillips are still available, and even Sean Figgins, who reportedly is going to be playing second base.
Yes.
I would. Isn't Brian Roberts going to be hurt at the beginning of the year?
He has like a back issue.
I would take Brandon Phillips over Aaron Hill.
Yes.
With that said, I took Brandon Phillips the next round.
I agree with you, though. I would take
Brandon Phillips,
Phillips
over
Aaron Hill.
But Aaron Hill, he's not going to be as bad he's not going to be as good as he was last year, but he's not going to be as bad as some people think.
Exactly. And
anyways, moving on.
I mean, to touch on Sean Figgins real quick, it's not reportedly Don Wakamatsu?
Sure.
The Mariners manager?
Jimmy.
Wakamatsu, we'll call him. Because I actually know that's his last name, because earlier I was thinking, that's an awesome last name.
Of course.
And he came out officially and said, to at least start the season, Sean Figgins will be playing second base, Jose Lopez will be playing third base.
And in ESPN League, all you need is 10
games. You only need 10.
In Yahoo League, all you need is 5 games started.
5 games started.
So
10 games played.
10 games played, exactly. So...
You know, within
he's
a week,
have
week and a half, these guys are going to have dual eligibility. At
that was always
second.
One of Figgins' best qualities, was the fact that he was eligible at second, third, sometimes short, and mostly outfield.
Outfield, yes.
So that was always one of his best qualities, and he's going to get that back.
And really one of his downfalls, at least up until this point, was that he was a third baseman with no power.
Exactly, and that is, again, fantasy focus. They've talked about that, how Figgins is almost one of the worst guys you could draft because... Third base is a very thin position, and speed is so abundant
that you
to get speed
you need to get a
third.
Power third baseman.
Exactly.
Exactly.
But now that he's going to be second base eligible, he's not that bad.
Exactly. He's a very, very good option at second base.
And better than Brian Roberts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
I would take him over Brian Roberts.
Easily.
Yeah.
An interesting stat from the famous, talented Mr.
Matthew Berry.
Matthew Berry. If you're listening, Matthew, email in. Sean Figgins has hit under 270 career while starting at second base,
mm-hmm.
and has hit just under 300 career starting at third base. Now, it's skewed a little bit because he used to be a complete super utility player
right.
and not getting that many starts at any place specifically. And then last year, he had a very, very good year while playing solely at third base.
Right.
So it is skewed, and you could basically... have a stat, say whatever you want it to, depending on what stat
you I'm not sure like you said, I'm not sure I care about that much. It's like people, I think you've said this, that Jacoby Ellsbury is going to be better this year because he's playing left instead of center. I don't buy into that a whole lot. Like, sure, he's going to be running less because he's playing left instead of center.
Yeah,
but
less
it's
defensive strength.
It's not that big of a deal.
Exactly. It is, you know, a bit of a deal in fantasy because if you're playing in an outfield-specific league, where you have left field, center field, right field, there aren't that many amazing left fielders.
Right.
So Jacoby will have his value go up some once he becomes eligible there.
Right. So we spent a lot of time on the first four rounds.
Let's try to speed up a little bit.
Warp speed. So let's talk about our picks real quick.
Right.
In the fourth round, I took Pablo Sandoval. You took Ryan Zimmerman ahead of Sandoval.
Ooh, I think Ryan Zimmerman is going to be really – he's a quiet, amazing player.
Zimmerman,
he's on the Nationals, so he doesn't get a lot of publicity.
30 home runs, 100 runs, 100 RBIs, 300 average.
Yeah. So, I mean, nothing notable.
He's like
from
what
steals.
Carlos Lee has been the last couple of years, but at third base.
Exactly. And much more reliable at this point,
and younger.
I would say.
Okay, so next, fifth round, I took Brandon Phillips at second base because, as you said, we needed to start a middle infielder, a second base, and a shortstop.
Right.
I think he was my first second baseman.
He was.
Yeah,
you took him in the fifth,
and then I took
Zobrist in the seventh middle infielder.
I took Brandon Phillips at second base. With the 44th pick. With the 45th pick, you took Mark Reynolds.
Right.
Who I like a lot. You needed power because you had a lot of speed.
Yeah, and it did put me behind a little bit. I had to counteract his obviously low average with a lot of guys. I pretty much, aside from Reynolds, I took a lot of high average guys.
Which is good. You need to protect average.
I do.
That's one of the things. So, so you took Mark Reynolds, and then with the very next pick, you did Justin Verlander. After taking Halliday and Lincecum.
Right. I felt Verlander was a little bit of a stretch there. I didn't want to go starter again so early, but I really like his value, and I would take him over any of the next 10 to, 15 picks in this draft.
You take Verlander?
Yeah, over any of the next guys.
Okay.
Like, I basically went with him because I didn't like any of the other... You know, the next hitters off the board were Jason Worth to you,
right?
Who is a good power-speed combo. I felt that was a little stretch in the sixth round.
Yeah. No, it was. I was thinking about taking Verlander with my pick because he would have been, I think, my first starting pitcher.
Yeah.
He was a good pick there. He's going to have lots of Ks, lots of wins, lots of good ERA, whip, all that good stuff.
Basically a stud. I mean, if Justin Verlander... Even in a 9 or 10 team league, if Justin Verlander is your first starter, you're starting out okay.
Right. With that said, I was debating between Verlander and Cliff Lee, who went a couple picks after.
Right.
Because I think Cliff Lee is going to be really good this year with the defense that Seattle has and the park that they have.
Right.
I think they're interchangeable, Verlander and Lee.
Verlander's see Lee a little bit behind because he doesn't have as much of a track record.
Right. Verlander's going to have better Ks, but I think Lee's going to have better whip and better ERA because he has better defense.
That's a decent argument, especially now with Figgins at second base and Lopez at third.
Right.
Which...
So yeah, like you said, I took Worth right after you took Verlander.
Right.
That was because I didn't really have any speed yet, and I wanted to continue the power trend.
Yeah.
But I wanted to start the process.
Exactly.
So I took Worth ahead of guys like B.G. Upton, who's going to get a lot of speed, ahead of Bobby Abreu, who's going to be okay. And then in the seventh round, I took Ben Zobrist,
at 62 overall, who was a guy who I was darn ready to take at 63 overall.
Yeah. I took Ben Zobrist to 62 overall because, again, we needed to start a middle infielder, and he was pretty comparable to the hitters that were left. The guys that were left were like Andre Ethier, Nick Markakis, Kendry Morales, Adam Jones, Nelson Cruz. I feel like he might be a tick worse than those guys.
But at second base and outfield
His versatility,
eligibility.
Exactly. And he was by far the best middle infielder left.
Oh, easily, easily. I as soon as you took Zobrist, I then decided... to try to shoot for Gordon Beckham, who I took in the ninth round.
He's going to be eligible at second after 10 games, but he was the next middle infielder who can technically be called a middle infielder, and he was taken two rounds after Ben Zobrist.
Yeah, and I basically decided at that point to take him and then not to take an actual eligible second baseman until the last round.
No, Beckham was a good pick. After I took Zobrist,
you reached
for Matt Wieters.
I believe I've... taking the Kool-Aid to turn a phrase.
Matt Wieters is going to be fantastic.
I think he's going to be a really good catcher long term. I think 63 overall is a bit early.
63 overall is higher than where he's going in normal drafts, but I can guarantee you he would not have made it back to you because I would have taken him probably
instead
with
of
my
Andre
next
Ethier.
Pick, or I would have taken him in the
instead
next
Josh Beckett. Yes,
he would not have made it back to you. So if you wanted him and if this is basic draft strategy, if there's a guy that you want,
take him,
and you know that he won't make it back to you, there's no reason not to take him. Just because he's going seven picks below his normal draft position means nothing. If you want him, take him.
It's people that you're going to have to deal with this league. If it's a league that you're playing in the whole year, it's not just some kind of throwaway league. Taking a guy that you don't like is a horrible idea. That's why I basically in round 8, I first pick overall in round 8, 64th overall in the draft, Billy Butler.
Yeah.
Who had
again? I think
he's
a
really good young player.
I think you had back-to-back reaches here, Weeders and Butler. But like you said, if you liked him, you had a.
I liked him over Ethier, over Markakis, who were the next two guys. I thought Adam Jones might fall a little bit more. I thought about taking Kendry Morales, but basically, I didn't like any of those picks as much. So I decided, I think Billy Butler's gonna have a very good year. And I'm going to basically take that risk.
Right. I think I would take Kendry Morales over Billy Butler.
I definitely thought about that, but I took the potential.
It's pretty close.
Yeah.
They're basically the same guy.
Pretty much.
Actually. As we've said, I took Zobrist, you took Weeders, then you took Butler, then I took Andre Ethier because I wanted more power outfielders.
Right.
I wanted to get guys that you wanted. That's fine. Nothing really eventful happened in the rest of the 8th round. To begin the 9th round, Carlos Gonzalez was taken to begin the 9th round.
It was a bit of a reach. I like his potential in a keeper league, but I don't think this year. I mean, there are some people, especially in our league, our keeper league that we reference every once in a while, that Mr. Shane Miller is in.
He just traded basically in a pretty big trade. He went from Carl Crawford to Carlos Gonzalez, and he's not that worried about it.
He isn't. I mean, Carlos Gonzalez is with his third team at a very young age. And you don't get traded that often as a prospect unless people really believe in you.
Or people really don't believe in you.
Or the team you have.
Like Delmon Young.
Right.
Who's only been traded once.
Right.
Anyways, I've never been super high on Carlos Gonzalez, but some people are, so it's basically in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah.
Anyways, so moving on. That wasn't even either one of our picks. That was just someone took him 73rd overall. We both think it was a reach.
I would probably have waited about 20 to 30 picks to take Carlos.
I definitely
Gonzalez.
Would have.
I had him on my radar, but I wasn't going to take him anywhere near
that. He was nowhere near my radar. I probably am never going to have him on my team.
Okay. So 80th overall.
Yes, 80th overall. I took Josh Beckett as my first starting pitcher in round 9. I wanted to take Adam Dunn, who went 2 picks before me, because I wanted to get the power, and he's going to get around 100 runs, around 100 RBIs.
That's pretty much all Adam Dunn does.
Exactly. His average is going to be terrible, so then I was going to have to sort of compensate by taking more average guys. But I went with Josh Beckett because he went. The very next pick, you took Gordon Beckham, as we talked about earlier. You wanted a second base guy.
Yeah. I think that's a bit of a reach, given his actual current production. But there are people who think that he could just extremely blow up. Once he's a second baseman, he's a high-power, decent-speed second baseman if he does, you know, transition well.
He's being compared to Chase Utley.
Exactly,
which is
ridiculous. Anytime that a young player is compared to a superstar, I think is ridiculous.
It's like Jason Howard being compared to Albert Pujols in the outfield.
Exactly.
Jason Hayward? I feel like I said Jason Howard. Jason Hayward.
Hayward.
Just to clarify in case I misspoke.
Jason
Hayward,
Howard.
Who we will talk about in a little bit, Jason Hayward. Anyways, you took Gordon Beckham, who is right now third base eligible, but will be second base eligible in 10 games. With the very next pick, you took your fourth starting pitcher, Matt Cain.
I decided at a certain point that I didn't like the hitters that were available there, so I just kind of, you know, a thing that some people have trouble with in drafts is I adjusted my plan mid-draft.
Right.
There were starters there that I liked, so I took them.
Yeah, that's how I felt, and that's why I went hitter early, is because I actually did a mock draft or two before this one, and I noticed that there are actually lots of starting pitchers that I liked available late.
There are, definitely.
So that's why I went hitter early.
Especially in this league.
Yeah, you went pitcher early. We'll see which one works out better. But you took Matt Cain, 82nd overall. 83rd overall, I took Ricky Nolasco.
Who I think potential-wise could work out, but is a bit of a risk.
I like him more than Matt Cain.
That's ridiculous in my opinion.
That's because you're a Giants fan.
Maybe.
And
also because I'm of sane mind.
And Matt Cain is on your team in the Keeper League, and Ricky Nolasco is on my team in the Keeper League.
So we're both biased.
Let's make a bet.
Player rater or 5 stats?
Let's see here really quick. What the hell? Five stats. I don't like
Inning pitch instead of
innings pitch instead
saves.
Of saves. K's, ERA, WHIP, wins. And innings pitched.
Yeah.
Do it.
Okay, so we got Lindstrom versus Halladay and Cain versus Nolasco.
Good.
I'm cool with that.
Okay, so the round 10 was actually pretty interesting, I think. a couple guys were taken in here. They're kind of questionable. 85th overall was Jose Reyes.
To be fair, the guy didn't know the extent of Reyes's injury.
Right, and I'm not even saying it's a reach to take him there.
It's
I think
a gamble.
It's definitely a gamble because if he's healthy, he's a first round pick.
Yeah, yeah.
If he's not healthy, obviously he's shouldn't be drafted.
Exactly.
It's basically a feast or famine pick. The guy, I don't think he had a shortstop yet. If it works out for him, fantastic. It's a risk. I like taking risks. I'm a risk taker.
Yeah, you know, win or lose. I mean, if you're second place, third place, that's first and second loser.
Something my family always says is bet big, win big.
Exactly.
So this guy bet big, and if he wins, he's going to win big.
Exactly. I mean, Jose Reyes, like we said, he's a gamble, but he could easily pay off there. Right.
Another
85th overall.
There was two other sort of guys similar to Reyes.
I know exactly
round,
who you're going
to
talk
Brandon
about.
Brandon Webb and Josh Hamilton.
Exactly.
Those guys are basically in the same boat as Jose Reyes.
That
I,
health
I feel
is
like,
the question, not talent.
No.
These guys are amazingly talented.
Exactly. The problem here is that I feel like Brandon Webb is a bad risk to take. I feel like Jose Reyes is a good risk to take.
Yes.
I feel like Brandon Webb and Josh Hamilton are bad risks to take.
I would agree.
Yeah. I feel like their upside relative to their risk is not.
Yeah, they're not. Their upside is probably like fifth or sixth round if they're completely healthy.
Right.
While Jose Reyes is a first round pick.
There you go.
So the risk for
Hamilton going into last year is being taken sort of late first, early.
That's because he had that one really amazing year and
so
people
he,
were stupid.
Yeah. So if he's healthy for a full year, he could potentially be in the first round, but
he's just
not
gonna be
going
healthy.
To
be
healthy. No.
We know that. We know that much
he's
with
Chipper
much
Jones
more certainty than Jose Reyes.
Exactly. So moving on, those are the risks taken in that round.
Round 11.
Round 11.
You went Cole Hamels, who I liked that,
Cole
that
Hamels,
late.
I like, yeah, in round 11, 98th overall. I like Cole Hamels. It was my third starting pitcher. I took three starting pitchers in a row. Actually, I took five starting pitchers in a row, but we haven't got to the other two yet.
Yeah.
I took Cole Hamels, 98th overall, because according to Mr. Buster Olney of ESPN, he's looking really good in camp this year, and I like...
And if
that.
I remember right, last year he was a victim of the Verducci effect.
He was. And normally, sometimes when people have that, they sort of bounce back the next
exactly.
year.
Exactly. So I think Cole Hamels is a nice value there.
He's in no way going to be relied upon as the ace now that they have Roy Halladay.
Exactly.
He has much less pressure.
And just to throw off a couple of names before Cole Hamels, Johnny Damon, who I would take Cole Hamels ahead of.
Absolutely.
Michael Young, I would take Cole Hamels ahead of. Joaquim Soria, basically because he's just a relief pitcher, I would take Hamels ahead of. Carlos Pena, I would take Hamels ahead of. And Jonathan Papelbon, I would take Hamels ahead of.
So I took Ricky Nolasco at 83rd. Then with my next pick at 98th, I took Cole Hamels.
Yeah.
I'm biased, obviously, but I would take Cole Hamels over any of the people that were taken in between Nolasco and Hamels. So we have Berkman, Reyes, Lee, Hunter, Webb, Hamilton, Posada, Heath Bell, Johnny Damon, Clayton Kershaw, Michael Young, Joaquim Soria, Carlos Pena, Jonathan Papelbon.
The one guy I might take over Hamels is Clayton Kershaw, and that's because I am a total sucker for potential.
No, definitely
and he
as
has
a lefty. He just needs
of that.
He just needs to prove that he can pitch past the fifth inning.
Exactly.
Once he can do that, he'll be an ace. He'll be he'll be up in the conversation
but
as a top five starter.
Every other one of those hitters, I totally agree with.
Absolutely. So I took Cole Hamels 98th overall. 99th overall, you went with Jay Bruce.
Who, in a reach, ESPN projections have him as a freaking stud. They have him hitting like 30-something home runs, hitting 270.
Yeah, he'll be a power guy.
Yeah. And then I took Andrew McCutchen next, basically here starting my run of speed.
Yeah.
That I basically saw
you
the amount of speed left in the outfield and the amount of power I had previously taken and decided at that point that if it worked out pretty well, and it did in my opinion, that the next couple of guys I take would be, you know, the next couple of picks I had after Andrew McCutchen, I had Michael Bourne and Julio Bourbon, the next two picks.
Right.
And then Dexter Fowler was... So I ended
with a lot of speed.
I have a lot of speed.
So here's what we're going to do. We're running short on time. We're just going to run through our picks real quick. We're not going to go in as in-depth as we have. So you took Andrew McCutchen with my next pick. I took my fourth straight starting pitcher in Ubaldo Jimenez, who has my...
Lovely, lovely upside.
Yes, great upside. He has the same birthday as me. Who doesn't like that kind of stuff?
I do.
I do too. I was thinking about Wandy Rodriguez, who went four picks after Ubaldo.
Yeah.
And then in the 13th round, I took Brett Anderson.
Who I would have taken, that's 116, and I took Michael Bourne 117 overall. Brett Anderson was queued up already, ready for me to pick 117
Yeah,
overall.
Brett Anderson, I think he's gonna have a good year. This was, I had five straight picks of starting pitchers. You had four straight picks of guys who are basically just gonna be super fast. I
Right.
took Brett Anderson, you took Michael Bourne, then you took Julio Bourbon,
Right.
two straight speed guys, who followed Andrew McCutchen. So that was a three in a row.
Right.
With my next pick, I took Alexi Ramirez.
Little bit of a reach for me.
I don't think it was. I think
He
he
has
was
the
by far the
potential, but he's so streaky.
he was the best shortstop left, and
Left, yeah.
he
Oh,
was the best shortstop
easily,
left, and
yeah.
I needed a shortstop. So
Yes.
because I had Zobrist and Brandon Phillips at second base in middle infield, so I
Right.
needed a shortstop. So I took Alexi Ramirez. With my next pick, I took Juan Pierre,
Yeah.
who is risky. He's kind of old. It was the 15th round. I feel like he's going to steal lots of bases.
He's a very, to steal a term from the talented Mr. Rhodes, he's a very unsexy pick.
He is very unsexy,
He's
but
not that new young guy. You know exactly what you're going to get from him pretty much, which is like 35 to 40 stolen bases, okay average and nothing else pretty
I
much.
needed speed and I needed average.
This is that's
That's what he
exactly
does.
what Juan Pierre
So
delivers.
with the next pick, you took your fourth straight speed guy in Dexter Fowler, who has
Who
the potential to pop, but he's basically at this point he's a speed
he's
guy.
basically a speed. He's gonna be over 30 stolen base guy, and he has, I would say, in his career 20 home run potential,
Yeah,
but this year
probably
probably tops out around 15.
10 to 15. Yeah,
Yeah.
he'll and then with your very next pick, you took your fifth starting pitcher, Roy Oswalt.
That sounds about right.
I feel like Roy Oswalt, I would have rather had other pitchers that were available than Roy Oswalt, but
Yeah, I had, there, I wasn't quite prepared at that point, and I had a couple other guys lined up, like a as Drubal Cabrera, who went a round and a half earlier, and so I knew I wanted Fowler, and then the rest of the time I kind of struggled, in coming up with Roy Oswalt, and I felt that he had decent value. I thought a little bit actually about the next pick, who you took.
Yes,
But after the amount of speed I took, I didn't need Rajay Davis.
yes, this was my turn to sort of have the speed run because I had a bunch of power guys before, including Miguel Cabrera and Ryan Howard and Andre Ethier and all those kind of guys.
Right.
I needed speed. So I went with Juan Pierre, you took Fowler, you took Oswalt, then I took Rajay Davis.
Who I think could have an amazing year.
Yeah, I feel like
It could
he's
hurt you a little bit, but this is late enough and it's fine.
I feel like he's equal to Juan Pierre, basically. I
Oh
feel like
yeah,
they're going to
with
hit around
more
300.
upside.
Definitely, because he's younger.
Right.
So they're going to hit around 300. They're going to steal 40 bases, probably at least, maybe a little bit more. And that's what I needed. So that's what we did there. In the next round, round 17, I
You
started.
started to go with position over talent a
Yeah.
little bit.
Yeah. My philosophy in a draft, especially one this shallow, is to take best player available because you're always going to be able to find things to fill positions
Right.
later. So this was round 17. We're getting sorted down to the nitty-gritty. I didn't have a closer yet,
Right.
so I took Rafael Soriano.
And I didn't have a closer at that point
Exactly.
either,
So you went back to back with another speed guy, Alcides Escobar,
who fills my middle infield
shortstop.
position.
Exactly. And then you took Billy Wagner.
Right, who huge injury risk could turn out to be nothing for me eventually.
Right. I feel like
I
I
think
like Billy Wagner,
if he's
but
healthy, he's going to be really good.
yeah, I feel like in the same position that Mike Gonzalez was last year. I think they're going to sort of
You
split the
think
clip.
Saito might steal some saves?
I think
That's
they're.
fair. That's fair. I'd say I
That's
could see that.
because they're righty lefty. I feel like that's what's going to happen
That's
in
fair.
Atlanta.
Yeah.
So I also, to this point, didn't have a catcher.
Right.
So because I was going to take Matt Wieters and you reached for him.
Right.
So good job there. I took Ryan Dumit with the 100.
Who, in the 18th round, if he somehow finds a way healthy all year,
Right.
wow, that's a good value.
Yeah, I liked him there. Obviously, that's why I took him there. He's a good catcher, and the reason I waited so long in catcher is because this is a super shallow league. Guys like Russell Martin, Mike Napoli, and AJ Pierzynski and Chris Ionetta are all on the waiver wire.
Right, so I mean, I reached for Wieters, who I think is going to have very, very good
Yeah,
production.
no, it was a good
But
reach for Wieters.
after the top four, I would say about catchers,
Yeah. It
Mauer,
go
McCann, Martinez, and Wieters.
Yeah, it
At that
goes
point, you might as well wait.
exactly. So that's what I did. I took
Yeah.
Dumit, and if Dumit doesn't work out, there's like five other guys I'd be okay with
Exactly.
having on my
If he
team.
gets hurt, it's not going to hurt you to replace
Exactly.
him.
So I took Dumit there. The next round, in round 19, I took another starting pitcher because I was low on pitchers. I had taken basically pitchers or hitters for the first 20 rounds or so. I took David Price, 178th overall.
Now I have a question real quick for you.
Go for it.
Would you have taken Clay Buchholz or Ryan Purcell over Price?
No, those were the guys I was targeting. I was in the order I had them was Price, Buchholz, Porcello.
I would probably have taken them in the order they were drafted.
Buchholz, Porcello, Price.
Purcell, Price.
Yeah, Price I think has the most upside. He was the number one prospect in baseball.
He is very streaky at this point.
He's young.
He
was streaky last year.
And
I feel
he's still struggling with his command, at least at this point.
He's having a career path that a normal pitcher has.
Exactly.
He's having the Felix Hernandez career path.
Yes.
Which I'm okay with. Again, I really like Buchholz and I really like Porcello.
Yeah.
I would have taken Price over both of them and I got the guy I wanted.
There you go.
I was kind of disappointed not to have gotten one of those guys with my next pick.
Right.
But anyways, so I took David Price.
And I reached the next pick.
With the very next pick, you took Kyle Blanks.
Who I think has really, really good potential, and I wanted to grab that one more utility hitter that I could move into utility and feel comfortable with him once Beckham became second base eligible, because Beckham is my utility at least to start the year.
Yeah.
But I feel that Kyle Blanks, his projection on ESPN is something like in the 260s or low 270s and low 20 home runs. I think that is his floor.
Yeah, Kyle Blanks is good.
Yeah.
Kyle Blanks is not a bad pick.
Yeah, and then I reached Frank Francisco, and I think you reached for Carlos Marmol.
Yeah,
closers were getting very thin at that point.
Francisco and Marmol are both sort of high K, high ERA, high whip, high save guys.
Your next pick we can talk about real quick in round 21, Jason Hayward, who was 188th overall. I think
I was sweating.
At that point, you might as well take him. Because he has the potential to outperform 188th overall.
Definitely.
But he's probably at least he's not going to underperform that, I'd say.
Yeah. So the question, as I said before, I'd made a couple mock drafts before this just to see where guys were going. And this was about where Hayward was going, and I was planning on taking him a couple rounds earlier than this.
And you decided to wait.
It slipped my mind. No, I didn't
decide. Oh, really?
I completely forgot.
Nice.
I took Carlos Marmol, as we said a second ago, and then right after I took the pick, I sort of scrolled down the list. I'm like, damn it. I wanted to take this.
Yeah.
Is exactly where I pegged Jason Hayward. And I was sweating it the whole
time. And he made it all the way back to you.
He made it back to me.
I definitely would have considered him in 188 or 189
I was,
or 190 in my next
I
pick.
Was, I was, that was the pick that I was worried about most. Losing.
I definitely wanted to take Wade Davis, who I ended up taking 189th overall.
Yeah, after I took Hayward, you took Davis, then you took John Roush.
That was a reach, but as we were saying,
again,
saves
it's a risk.
Were thin at this
right.
point.
With the very next pick, I took Leo Nunez.
Who I personally don't like, but is a very, very similar risk.
I don't think he's a similar risk to Roush, because the risk with Roush is that he's not even going to have this closer's job.
Right.
Nunez has the closer's job. The risk with him is he's
is
terrible
good.
At it.
Yeah, yeah, so, okay. That's fair.
So it's
a little
it's,
bit less of a
risks.
Risk because it's more job security.
All I want
but,
from Nunez is saves.
Yeah.
He can get a 5 ERA if he wants. I don't give a shit. I just need saves.
So your next pick, Francisco Liriano.
Who I was surprised was still there.
I forgot about him. Honestly, I forgot about him.
ESPN has him too low on their list.
Yeah.
That sort of worked out for
that's
me.
That's really the thing that you need to keep track of. I believe last year, David Price was really, really, really low on
right.
the list.
I had him in almost
and
every
became
ESPN
an amazing
had.
Value just because people in normal leagues were just forgetting about him.
Right. He was taken after Joe Blanton, after Brian Mattis, after Scott Kazmir, after Hiroki Kuroda,
yeah.
after
and
Jonathan Sanchez.
Hitters like Garrett Jones and Ryan Theriault.
Ryan the Riot.
Yeah.
Adam
so,
LaRoche, Octavio Dotel.
I would take Francisco Liriano over all those guys.
Yeah. Had I seen Liriano, I would have taken him like 5 rounds earlier.
Yeah.
I mean, like Liriano this year.
It's a huge risk, but in round 23...
I lucked into that one.
Yeah. And then Chris Perez, I took in round 23. Again, saves were thin. Kerry Wood is hurt. Perez has the job, at least for now.
Right. Yeah,
at this point,
16 weeks.
I'm taking guys who I think could help me, but wouldn't mind dropping at a certain point during the season.
Yes.
And my next pick, which you called in the draft.
I called. I was going to take
you
him.
You actually, you somehow knew I was going to take him before I knew. Because I was still thinking between a couple of guys.
This is the guy we've talked about on this podcast.
Yeah.
We've talked about him in real
we've
life.
We've exhausted the
he's
conversation.
On your team in our Dynasty League.
Neftali Feliz.
He's a hot topic among us.
Yes. He is.
I normally hate him, and you normally love him. You got him a pick before I was going to take him.
Yes.
So there's that.
In round 24, 208th overall, and he is pretty much pegged for the bullpen at this point.
Yeah.
Which he was dominant as.
Right. He'll get over if he stays in the bullpen the whole year, and if he stays healthy in the bullpen, he'll probably get over 100 strikeouts.
Right. And personally, for me, having Frank Francisco is a nice little bonus.
Exactly.
Because if Francisco gets hurt, I have his backup.
Exactly. That's like in our Dynasty League, I really want Daniel Bard.
And
because
it's
I
not
have
gonna happen.
It's not gonna happen. The dude that has him is not gonna let him he's
So your yes. next pick, another guy who I actually had in mind.
This was an
we have talked about actually before on the podcast.
I took Everett Cabrera because I needed speed still. I wanted to get one more speed guy, and I wanted to get someone I could put at the middle infield position.
That's exactly who he is.
It was what I wanted.
Right.
I got a guy who I was surprised was still there.
I had actually thought of him a couple times, but was at the point where I needed pitching, so I took Perez and Feliz instead of this guy.
He's a guy that I like, and I kind of like him not, at least for this season.
Yeah.
I don't like him that much less than Jason Hayward, because he has...
This year, yeah, because he has
for this year.
More of a track record.
Yeah, I think they'll probably be pretty similar this year. Jason Hayward's going to far surpass him in their careers.
Oh, yeah.
Colby Rasmus.
Probably. It's still...
Yeah.
He still has amazing
obviously
potential.
No one knows. Yeah,
Colby Rasmus. Throw the name out there. Stop confusing people. Yeah.
I took Colby Rasmus with the second-to-last pick and with
224th overall. Amazing value, especially when you consider guys like Daisuke Matsuzaka.
I like Matsuzaka this
Brandon
year.
Lyon. And then basically a lot of guys decided to take their catchers for the last round, which is a decent choice. You don't get great guys. I personally like that 222 overall. I would have taken Giovanni Soto over Benji Molina or Kurt Suzuki, who were both taken before him.
Right. I like Kurt Suzuki this year. I think he's going to be good. But I have a little bit of a small story for you.
Because we were running way too long.
I was drafting with my family in the room, and then Jennifer, my fiance, was there. And this whole time, she was watching over my shoulder, being
as
much attention.
Do.
She was paying as much attention as she could possibly could. She's like, "Oh yeah, Pablo Sandoval, I like him." Blah 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 blah. At the very end, I'm like, "All right, it's the last pick. I'm gonna let you choose the guy that I want that I can take."
Yeah.
I'm gonna give you three players, and you can rank them, and I will take them as you say I will.
Who were the three?
Daisuke Matsuzaka.
Nice.
Colby Rasmus and some guy who didn't end up getting drafted. Kevin Slowey was the guy.
Okay.
He's still
to throw
available.
That name out there. That's how. Diet Soderberg League, this league
exactly.
is.
He's still available.
Yeah.
So those are the three guys. I'm a Red Sox fan. She sort of likes the Red Sox because I do.
Yeah.
She said Daisuke first because that's the only name of the three she recognized.
Knew, yes.
And I'm like, hey, how about Colby Rasmus second? She's like, okay. And I kind of lucked into the fact that Daisuke was taken before me because I wanted Rasmus ahead.
Right.
And I won brownie points for taking who she said I should take.
Nah, she's totally going to listen to this. You're going to be in trouble.
She hasn't listened to all of... She's not going to make it this long.
We're at... An hour and almost 17 minutes, 18 minutes. She's not making this long.
So,
I'd say Jen makes the 50 minutes.
With that, we have taken way too much time talking about this.
Yeah.
You ended with the draft with the second baseman that ESPN forced you to take, Scott Sizemore.
An interesting topic that we probably might want to go over later.
Probably might.
I was forced into taking a second baseman because Gordon Beckham was going to be my second baseman. Not eligible there yet, so I did not have a eligible second baseman on my roster. So after I took Neftali Feliz, my player queue went away. Whenever I tried to look at just third baseman on the draft page, it said, no one is eligible under this ranking that you can draft.
Right, so it made me draft
a full lineup, which I don't necessarily mind.
It's
I would have liked to have known that.
Exactly. As an auto draft feature, it should do that because you shouldn't be able to take players
like all first basemen.
Exactly, the auto draft function should be able to field you a full lineup. But if
right.
you're choosing your own players,
I would have
it should
preferred,
let you do whatever you want.
There were a couple guys who I would have preferred. I don't mind that because I was kind of planning to take a second baseman the last pick
and
anyway.
And the thing about this is, it was the very last pick of the draft.
Yeah.
Any of those guys that you wanted to take
I
are available.
Yeah.
You can immediately drop Scott Sizemore because you have the first waiver priority.
Yeah.
Because you had the last pick.
Right.
So you can get any guy you want.
Yeah.
It was unfortunate.
It was just kind of weird.
And Scott Sizemore
caught me
not
a
bad.
Little off guard.
Right. So with Scott Sizemore not bad, you didn't really get that much of the chef.
Yeah. I mean, I was like I said, I was.
I'm a win this league. That's that. We can move on from this topic.
Move on to the finish.
Move on to the we're not doing a player in-depth player, are we, this
No,
week?
we're
We've spent way too
completely
much time
covering the
here.
draft this week.
So yeah, you
We're
got
running
MVP.
way over time.
That's fine.
We're gonna wrap it up right now. So that's gonna do it for the episode 10
I
extravaganza.
apologize for us sobering up towards the end. It
We
wasn't
definitely
nearly
did a little bit. I'm gonna have to
as
work
much
on that because I have a
tomfoolery.
lot of work that I have to do for other things tonight,
I have no work that I need
even
to
though it's
do.
spring break. It's fun work at
I should
least.
have been drunk this whole time. I had nothing to do.
Yeah.
I have nothing to do for a week.
Yeah. So next week, to tease a little bit, we are going to, at a certain point during the week, release our 41 through 50 of our top fantasy prospects.
We're gonna we've been talking about this for like 2 months
And now that we're on
since the
spring break, bam, it's
we can
gonna
actually knock it
happen.
out. So we're gonna have our top 50 fantasy prospects
Fantasy
available.
keeper prospects. There are a lot of fan there are a lot of prospect lists out there that factor in defense and other real baseball
And
things
there are a lot of fantasy prospect lists that
that are
only
this
they'll
for this year.
exactly. So
We
the, so
are
like Dan Runzler is number one or whatever
he
because
won he was top 10.
which is just as bad.
So we are gonna have kind of a hybrid of that, our own personal creation. It's a we've talked about it before. It's a top 50
So
prospects.
to be more specific, it's top 50 prospect list for like a keeper slash dynasty. It's
Yeah.
a sort of a long term.
Long-term fantasy value for these guys. We do factor in like possibility that they actually follow through on their potential, obviously. But anyway, we will be releasing the 41 through 50 portion of the list at some point during this week, and we will be discussing it next week on the
Right.
podcast.
We're gonna talk about how we're gonna release this. We were talking about doing it in groups of 10, but we're gonna argue about this off the air.
We're stay tuned, everyone.
Noshowssports.blogspot.com. Check it out. You'll
As
at
well
least
as
at no.
noshowsports@gmail.com.
Please email us in. I don't want to beg, but do it, please. We just want an email just so we can
Just
talk
to know
about.
that there's society still out there, that civilization still exists.
Yep. So do that. Look forward to our prospect list. It'll be happening. Thanks for paying attention to this tomfoolery.
And in the words of an immortal wise man, peace out.
Now I really my baby, 'cause that girl's one of a kind.